What's up? It's your boys Jordan and Abraham. He's a professional runner, so he's your fast friend. I'm an MD PhD student, so I'm your smart friend. But most importantly, we are your friends who read One Piece.
Yes, sir.
And so we got a special episode coming to you guys today, straight from St. Louis. Jordan is here with me, right beside me. You guys probably can't tell. Probably doesn't sound any different to you, but he is here, and he is going to be catching some hands if he says
Yeah,
his
we,
usual blasphemous stuff.
it's lucky we got our friend Alex over here in the background, kind of just sitting, helping us set up his mic at his house. And he might have to jump in a couple times because normally we can't jump through the screens at each other,
Yeah.
but it might get a little heated
You
on this
got
podcast today.
you usually have a couple hundred miles protecting you. You can't say this
From
you're a
what?
normal from.
From
You
what?
know I've been in the gym. You
I
know
know you've been at the gym, but you still like 5'7" looking weak.
five,
All I
seven.
know is how many points you score in the game we played yesterday, playing a little volleyball at our friend Chris Noda's 30th
I
birthday.
have one question for you. Between the two of us, who got spiked on and stood over? I feel like you're supposed to be a professional athlete, right? Supposedly.
I'm a
And
professional runner.
you're also supposed to be taller than me. Yet somehow in a game, basically a game of volleyball, you ended up being on the receiving end of my spike and had me stand over you.
I feel like you just are trying to be a big man,
I don't
being a little short, being a little low. You were low in your height and you were low in your score,
Facts are the
and you were
facts.
trying to just come over
The
that.
facts are the
But
facts.
Abraham, I have an announcement to make.
Okay.
We are currently at 493 downloads, which is almost to 500, which is halfway to the benchmark that we set for when we're going to buy actual microphones.
Yes.
So if you like the sound quality of this and you were listening, continue to help us get more friends
Yeah,
who read One Piece
absolutely.
to listen to this podcast. I want to give a shout out to our friends in Germany. That's now the second biggest country besides the United States in terms of
Oh,
our
did it take
listeners.
over Belgium?
It
When
took
did
over
Belgium?
Belgium. It
Okay.
used to be Belgium. So I want to give a shout out to our friends in Germany who read One Piece. We love our European fam. And we're
Also,
excited to almost certainly reach 500 after this episode.
Belgium, you got to step your game up now, right? The
Hold on, man. We can't talk about Germans coming for people, man. I'm a Jewish man on this
Germans are
podcast, and we don't make too many jokes about Germans coming
coming
for
for
you
you.
in our community. But as we are almost at the end of the break, I've been getting a little scratchy, and so I'm excited to finally fulfill get rid of some of that I don't even know remember what you call it anymore. But we have that dependency, and you get a little scratchy because you don't have it. And we have a big topic this week that's been blowing up on our Discord server. In fact, a lot of our friends who are also on the server had to stop posting and were just tired of it, didn't want to read anything because we could not stop arguing with each other. And the bottom line is that you think that through the second half of the series that Usopp has been this super courageous character, which is obviously absolutely insane. Now, can you explain to me how you arrived at this conclusion?
I think I need to send you back to primary school so you can work on your reading comprehension. Because what I said is that Usopp is my favorite straw hat.
Well, you said
He's my
that.
favorite straw hat. And the reason he's my favorite straw hat, first and foremost, is because he's the funniest straw hat. Usopp is actually hilarious. Like, it's not even, I don't even think it's close. And you look throughout the story, and outside of, I would say, Luffy, obviously, and Zoro, he arguably has some of the hardest hitting moments in the series.
Talking
So,
about these moments, Abraham, what are these so-called moments that are harder hitting than any moments that a lot of our other characters had over the course of the series?
sure. Yeah, I'm not including flashbacks though. That's the
Okay,
caveat. No,
not including
no
flashbacks. All
flashbacks.
right,
Because
all right.
obviously Usopp doesn't have some great backstory. He was just like, abandoned by his kid, like half the characters, or
Right,
abandoned
by
by
his
his dad.
father, yeah.
Yeah, like half the characters in the
Right.
story. So, we're not talking about backstories, but from the jump, his fight against Captain Kuro, where, he's running into the village as the boy who cried wolf. He's trying to get everyone to know that shit is about to go, and no one believes him, and you just see how broken
Right, now
he looks on
I
his.
want to be clear.
That's
Let's not call it his fight against Captain Kuro because he never
sure.
fought against Captain Kuro.
That's true. He didn't.
But continue.
Yeah, but the whole Captain Kuro Syrup Village thing,
Right.
that was the first time Usopp moved me because it was just like he was hopeless. And he while he didn't fight Kuro, he single-handedly was ready to take on all of, I can't remember their crew's name, but the whole pirate crew. And
you know what? This is the revisionist history that drives me crazy.
No, he did. He took him on.
Ready to take on the.
He was fighting them, was he not? And then Luffy and Zoro showed up, obviously.
He threw some caltrops on the ground.
Right.
Like Kuro was about to show up and mess. I would not say that Usopp was ready to take on his entire pirate crew. He was ready to
foster
for a couple seconds. He was ready to throw some caltrops on the ground.
He would have lost, but he was ready to fight.
I do not think that what he was ready to do was fight them. I think he was ready to stand there and try and be a distraction until his super strong friends he just met were going to show up and actually fight Kuro.
Revisionist history. He didn't actually know that they were going to show up. Regardless, we can move on because Syrup Village is still East Blue. You know, this is not like the strongest Usopp moment.
Right.
For me, the most emotional Usopp moments happen during Enies Lobby and Water 7. Because the whole crew is... That whole arc, to me, is about testing the strength of the bonds the Straw Hat crew have. Obviously, with Robin abandoning them and such. But also, Usopp starts to get into his head, you know, about like this inferiority complex that he has because he's one of the weaker members of the crew. And he's like, you know... In my opinion, in his head, what's going on is if he's not able to kind of rise to the challenges that they are going to come across as they continue to sail, he's worried about being abandoned. And as all of this is happening, the ship that his friend got him, the Going Merry, is a crewmate that they're going to have to abandon. I feel like you get a lot of projection from Usopp in this arc. Obviously, he has this big falling out with Luffy. That whole fight. If you tell me that fight didn't move you,
That's a really strong moment. Yeah. I really enjoyed what that meant for Usopp, Luffy, and the crew. I thought it was really interesting seeing him create these sort of like MacGyverish ways of approaching that fight.
Yeah.
That while you're watching it, you honestly almost come to believe for a second
he could win.
That maybe
Like, is he gonna beat Luffy?
And obviously at the end, Luffy just like punches him into the ground. Yeah. He's like, you knew there was no way that you could beat me. But you do have this appreciation for Usopp's growth in that moment and his ability to potentially become something that's going to help the crew, despite him beginning as a coward and being the weakest member of the crew.
And then you also have his moment shooting down the flag in Enies Lobby, which was fire. I think the speech that Sanji gives him is like, just because you can't beat Jabura, like, doesn't mean that there's no purpose to you being here. It's kind of like repurposing Luffy's thing, Luffy's speech against Arlong, where he's like, there's all these things that I can't do.
Right.
He's like, just because you can't do this doesn't mean you can't help us. And then obviously he has this whole speech that he gives to Luffy as he's like laying down at Lucci's feet. And his lobby is just jam-packed with Usopp moments. I kind of skipped over Alabasta, but obviously I think his fight against Miss Merry Christmas and Mr. Four was fire.
That's a good one too. And here's the thing, because I want to jump in here because I really like that you are talking about Enies Lobby as, you know, some might say the peak of Usopp.
I think Elbaf will be.
Man, oh my god, we're not getting to Elbaf.
But you know what? Go ahead.
We have not gotten to Elbaf yet. We're not there.
Okay.
To this point, you might say that that's his peak. Obviously, that's like around, you know, chapter 400 or so.
Yeah.
And I think for this character who we had seen over the course of that first 400 chapters go from a guy in Syrup Village who, you know, basically he can throw caltrops on the ground. He can serve as a distraction.
Yeah.
He can shoot down the branch, or he can shoot Django while he's riding around on Zoro's back. And Zoro shoots down and Zoro cuts down the tree so he can actually see him. And then you go to Arlong Park, and I think one of the really cool moments there is when he actually beats the Fishman, because he's this dude who like really isn't special.
Yeah.
He's the dude who is the most normal dude. His powers are even things. Like, yes, Sanji kicks, but like no one could actually kick like Sanji.
Right.
The things Usopp can do are
he's a normal person
that are average dude could do, and he managed to beat a fish man.
Yeah.
And he says, like, wow, this is crazy. Even I can actually beat, you know. Then obviously he gets back up for a second. He just like, Usopp's hammer! Usopp's hammer! Rubber band of death!
Hilarious! Hilarious!
Obviously, like, those are all great moments. And it reaches a point in Eni's lobby, where he has a disagreement with the captain. He demonstrates this ability to fight with ingenuity,
yeah.
And he demonstrates some amount of courage while, even though he's wearing a mask, he's doing things like shooting down the flag and being Sogek King, your sniper king. However, over the second half of the series...
You mean like post-time skip when you say second half?
Basically, yeah. I mean, he wasn't in... Yeah. I guess he was in Thriller Bark, but you know, he wasn't in the next major arcs of the Marine, for etc. But basically, since Eni's Lobby, a lot of the character development that I think we saw the potential for, of him actually going off becoming this brave warrior of the sea, has been wasted. To me, it feels like... We have this dude who, yes, he was, like, a super coward. And that doesn't mean that he's not ever supposed to, like, demonstrate some amount of cowardice.
Yeah.
But there's just so much Usopp whining and being like, oh, my God, I'm so scared. And, like, not actually using that ingenuity that we had seen. Or at the very least, not using it in a way that feels like it's demonstrating his courage of being like, I'm going to get around being a dude who's scared all the time. And using that to actually potentially find ways to beat people who are up, who like who he's facing like right in front of him.
Yeah.
And so for me, like yes, all this I'm a coward stuff is funny for a while.
Yeah.
But I'm just sick of it. I'm sick of it for 700 chapters of like before the Battle of Sugar. He's like, oh my God, I'm so scared. I'm gonna run away. Yes, he eventually comes, and we can talk about that later. But like. I don't need those 8 pages of him being a coward after he's been with this crew for that long. Really quickly, Wano, obviously the one that we all look at, he doesn't even have a redeeming moment over the course of this entire arc. He just tells Nami, oh, I don't want, like, Nami, it's okay. Don't tell him. Just lie to him. Don't tell him that Luffy's going to be the Pirate King, which is so antithetical to this idea of him wanting to support people's dreams.
Right.
And so while I appreciate what you're saying about that Eni's Lobby, about what he showed, I think that a lot of the potential that he demonstrated there, both as a character and as a fighter, has been essentially completely wasted, and I'm tired of it.
I think you're talking about two different things. You mentioned courage and bravery, and then you also mentioned like wasted potential. And I think what you're conflating is... I agree. Oda has not... been very creative with being able to write hype fight scenes for Usopp in the post time skip, but I don't think that that is the same thing as saying that Usopp as a character has not been brave or courageous. Like, those are two different things, and I think it's something that a lot of the weaker crew members in general are going to struggle with as we progress through the series. So what I'm saying, in my opinion, Usopp has always been brave. Like, from the moment we met him, Usopp had, or from the moment he joined the crew, he's been a brave warrior of the sea. Because the way that I define bravery, I think the way a lot of people define bravery is not, like, I don't consider Zoro a brave character, because I think bravery is the ability to take action despite being afraid of doing something, not just not being afraid to do something, right? So,
sure, we can get into that.
And you can, maybe if you have a you can have a different definition of bravery.
I think that's a perfectly fine definition. Yeah. Like, right. I can get it. We can get into more about how I feel like that represents itself for Zoro, Luffy, etc.
Sure. But, like, my point is that Usopp has always been a brave warrior of the sea, in my opinion. I actually think we're going to kind of get to the end of the story, and it's his arc is going to be more of like an internal realization of what it means to be like brave. He's obviously continuously getting stronger as we progress through the series. But I think a lot of the issues that you're pointing to is like, well, back in Eni's Lobby, we had this whole nuanced fight between him and Luffy. And like you said, we genuinely believe that he might be able to like win this fight. And we haven't gotten any moments like that in the post-time skip. And I think the problem is that the scale of the opponents that we've been fighting has just increased so much in these later parts of the stories that a lot of these weaker Straw Hat characters, like, I think this is something that Nami and Chopper are both going to suffer from combat wise, not character wise, because I think that I hope that Oda is going to still be able to develop these characters outside of the context of combat, right? Like Nami navigating to Laugh Tale, right? I think there's going to be some kind of massive navigational feat that she's going to be able to pull off. But I don't expect to see her have some cool combat moments like she did in Alabasta, where she defeats like Mr. One's partner, right? Like,
right. And but again, right? Like, she had a moment that was instrumental in helping the crew get out of Whole Cake Island, in that she was the one who, like, landed one of the biggest blows of anyone against Big Mom as they're trying to escape.
True. But Usopp also, like, I know it's written kind of comically, but the whole crew literally falls apart in Dressrosa. Like, Luffy is turned into a toy. Law is turned into a toy. They all just...
Did Luffy get to know it?
No, he would have been. Oh, he would have been. Because Sugar was getting ready to touch both Luffy and Law before Usopp unlocked Observation Haki. So if we're just talking about, you know... I understand it wasn't written in any kind of hype way. Because I agree, the way he defeated Sugar wasn't all of that exciting. But it was very instrumental in them even getting out of that arc.
It was funny and it was helpful. And I'm not saying that that was not a really cool moment. And that is a moment that demonstrated some amount of ingenuity, right? Like, creating the star that's of his face.
His face,
getting completely defeated by Sugar and being completely
and
lucky.
And Treble.
Well,
Treble was...
Sure, whatever. It was, like, complete luck that he ended up getting out of that situation is the whole point. But... I want to get back before we actually get into this conversation about that, because I think that that fight is really at the core of what we're going to kind of be talking about. And I want to take a second to talk about that definition of bravery and how I see that, because I think that for me, that's really at the heart of a lot of this disagreement. The first part about it for me. So I'll respond quickly about, like, you know, what I see with Zoro and Luffy, right? And a lot of this, I'll say, comes from my own experience as an athlete.
Okay.
It's one thing when you are standing at the start line of a race and you're actually shaking and you're telling everyone you're nervous and you're, like, you know, looking around and you're like, oh my God, like, I'm scared. Or like, oh my God, I'm on the start line next to whomever. Yeah. My first U.S. championships, I was to the right of Evan Jaeger, who is the best steeplechaser, he's the American record holder, he's run 8 minutes. He wasn't Olympic silver medalist yet, I don't think.
Okay.
Actually, no, he was Olympic silver medalist
Big
just
shot.
The previous year. Yeah, exactly. And I'm a dude who, at that point, is just like an unsponsored guy. It's my first U.S. championship. However, when I'm standing on that start line, it's about your external, what you demonstrate and the way you teach yourself to be is to approach it. Even though I was waking up the night before that race with nightmares about the race, you approach it holding yourself incredibly calmly and understanding that you have a job to do and you have to get the best out of yourself. And you have to figure out how to channel what that nervousness, fear, whatever is, into that race.
Yeah,
that is what I don't think is, like, expressly talked about a lot when we talk about people like Zoro, when we talk about people like Luffy and things like that. But that's what I believe is going on with them. I think you can make an argument that it's less there for Luffy, and there's a whole piece about that I'm disappointed in some of his character development in that way too. But I think with Zoro, certainly, I feel like that's there, and with other characters, I think that's the case even when they're strong. What I see also with someone like Usopp, who doesn't necessarily have the ability to just beat a lot of characters, right? Because, like, it's one thing being like, I'm on the U.S. champion start line, I have to get the best out of myself. It's another thing if it's like, you actually have to beat this character to do it, and I don't know if I couldn't beat Evan Jaeger, and I don't know what I could do.
Right.
When I was in college, it was my last cross-country race of college, actually, and it was the Northeast Regional when I was at Brown. And we had to figure out the best strategy to help me try and get to nationals. And I want to just go out and put myself in a higher place and say, if I blow up, I blow up. And then if I don't blow up, then, you know, I'll make it into the race. But blow up as in, like, you go out too fast and then you're too tired. And then you have a really sometimes dramatic and tremendous, like, you fall backwards, right?
Okay.
And my coaches said, listen, a lot of guys think that courage is just saying, well, I put myself there and that's what I did. But actually, courage is not just throwing yourself there and, like, saying, well, I'm going to see what happens. Courage is saying, I know what the best thing that I can do is to give myself the best end result and the best chance to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't always look like the most obviously quote-unquote courageous or the quote-unquote fearless thing. It looks different, but that is real courage. And that's what I don't see Usopp demonstrating in a lot of these post-time skip fights. After he whines all the time with when he's about to go out with Sugar and Treble, I keep wanting to call her Carrot for some reason.
It's
I
all
don't know
good.
why. With Sugar and Treble,
Yeah.
he doesn't say, I have all these like crazy little stars. I have all these crazy gadgets. The way I fought Luffy was this fun thing. He just says, okay, after I decided I'm not going to leave them, I'm just going to go out and be like, announce myself very publicly and be like, hey, I'm shooting my star.
Sure.
Like, I'm Captain Usopp. And that's not what he would have given him a chance to do anything.
Right.
He could have got Sugar to pass out somehow by doing something creative, but that was not the answer.
So I want to respond to that real quick, right? Because I think the big thing about the Luffy Usopp fight is that he had setup time, right? I think Usopp with setup time is able to come up with all of these kind of creative solutions to do those kinds of things. Whereas in that moment, for example, right, he's just there in that moment and he has to. And
He had 2 years. He had 2 years of a break before
no,
then
no, to train and get
to
stronger.
train and get stronger.
But, and he did.
He had another like two arcs, Punk Hazard, Fishman Island. He had multiple arcs to also figure that out. Part of what he should be developing as a fighter is the ability to think on the fly and not be like, I need setup time.
No, but what I'm getting at is, again, I think we all think that someone like Treble and even someone like Sugar are, if we're scaling how strong these characters are, they far outclass him, right? The reason why Usopp is able to challenge someone like Luffy and make it into an interesting fight is because of this kind of whole idea of setup time, right? If he's fighting someone that's roughly equal to his level, then I agree with you. But in that context that he was in right there was any way that Oda wrote Usopp beating Treble and Sugar would have felt like the biggest plot armor, and like
No,
in the
it's like some, it's
it would
no,
have
it's
felt
like
horrible.
Nami landed a giant blow against Big Mom. It doesn't have to be that he
Right.
beat Sugar and Treble. It could be that from the shadows, he somehow found a way to get Sugar to pass out, right? That he in some did some kind made some kind of create some kind of distraction, created some kind of something. That's what he could have
But
done
he does do that later in that same arc.
later. But I'm saying, but when I talk about what's annoying about the courage not being there, it's when he's not. It's because they're like not right in front of him, right?
Yeah,
And what he did to me is not demonstrating
So
courage.
the other thing I kind of want to point out is I think a lot of these things that you're the shtick that you're tired of is a gag. It's to some degree it's a gag that Oda loves. And maybe you don't love it. I personally love the whole idea of, oh, I'm getting this island sickness disease. I'm getting like this whole Usopp being afraid of things. It's kind of like Zoro getting lost, Sanji getting nosebleeds, Luffy getting beat up by Nami and having like this blown up. Like, there are certain gags with different characters in his series that Oda likes to repeat over and over and over again. Some of which I love. I hate the Sanji nosebleed thing, for example, right? Because I think
Right.
in much in the same way you think this is overplayed, I think that whole shtick with Sanji has actually taken away from his character. I personally don't feel that way about the Usopp cowardly, brave duality kind of thing, but like it's just one of the like Oda has his shticks.
Is your phone ringing right now? Is it wait, is your
Mm,
phone
is
ringing?
it?
Hello?
No.
Hello?
Who's on the line?
It's a crack dealer? You looking for Abraham because
Oh,
you're
that
like
must
hearing
be
that
your fault.
crack?
That must be your
Nah,
fault.
man, because last time you were saying it was my phone the other time. You were like, why are they calling you my phone? We're here in person. I'm looking at your phone right now. I'm holding it. And it's your crack dealer coming up. He said, man, I heard you want to come with some One Piece ideas.
What is
I heard you want to come with some One Piece ideas and you needed some help. So
that?
your crack dealer is actually calling you up,
My crack dealer
trying
reads
to give
One
you those
Piece? He
ideas.
reads One Piece?
He
That's.
apparently. Nah, man. We Abraham had too much. So I'm trying to be a good friend, and Abraham's had too much crack lately, and he's out here saying completely wild things. So, I hope to not have any more future calls with you
You know,
anymore.
you're talking.
Thank you so much. And I really
You're
appreciate
talking with a lot of
your
familiarity
time.
with this person that you've allegedly never met before. I feel like the amount of familiarity that you have with my crack dealer leads me to believe that maybe you've had some
He told
pre-existing
me
relationship with this guy.
that he was the crack dealer on the phone just now. That's all that I knew. But Abraham, I think it's time. We're coming up. The one thing that I do have a dependency on is not crack, unlike you, but One Piece. And I've been getting a little bit scratchy as we've been on chapter 1111 for over 3 weeks at this point. So It's finally time for me to ask, what do you think we have coming in chapter 1112?
So, we've been teased with this Vegapunk reveal for like a month and a half now, right? I think in
I'm at
1109.
least at like quarter chub.
Yeah. Like 1109, I think, is when we first got this reveal that he's going to expose something about the world government for the
Right.
world.
Right.
And 1110 happened, 1111 happened. We didn't get anything. My prediction is that in 1112, we are still not going to get anything. Oda's going to buy time, do some other things, and then at the end of the chapter, we're going to be like, get some. We might get like a name drop or some like random tiny little reveal, but we're not really going to get into that until 1113.
I really hate to say it, but I kind of agree with that.
Yeah.
I feel like the pace that we have been going at over the course of this, like, wait for the reveal has been a little bit slower than we might like and or expect. I know that I talk about the word plays a lot, and you know, I've mentioned that 1113 and 1114, if you like the word plays, could be read as one piece. So that's kind of an interesting
They
way.
both could. Two different numbers can be read
It's hard to explain, but
the
because three is san and four can be not just yom but also she, you have the S sound at the beginning of each of them, so it can be, so they can both kind of they can both be one piece. And obviously 1116 is emu, or 116 emu, you know I'm big on that. So I think we're gonna get 13 and 14. I'm very much hoping that in one of those we're gonna get some serious reveals about the world. In 16, I think we're definitely gonna see him, but I don't know for sure. I would guess that we're not gonna see anything in this chapter. I think we're still gonna have a little bit more fighting, and I wonder if there's, I know there's a lot of talk online about has Robin been potentially abducted. I know there's a lot of theorizing. Like, I think there's still a little bit more to see about what the Elder Stars are actually doing and what that fight is gonna look like and where they're going to go to actually try and stop the broadcast. I think we're gonna get a little bit more information about that rather than actually finding out what's in it.
Yeah.
Well,
Sounds.
that's what we got for our predictions. We'll see. I know I've been a little bit more right about the, I'm gonna be a little more right
What?
about the prediction
In
piece,
what? Do we need to
actually.
go through the transcripts and go through each prediction? That's
But
wild.
on this one, we actually agreed, so it's pretty nice. But now it's time for S class or F class, the segment where Abraham and I find theories on the internet and rate them so you don't have to. And before we get started on this, Abraham, I want to give you a very quick question about our discussion last week.
Okay.
You suggested that if Laughtail is in or accessed through Enies Lobby, that ruins the theory. I know I was talking about a whale at the bottom of Enies Lobby, and you're saying that's because the world government would then just know where Laughtail is. And I'm honestly was thinking about it, and I was like, why does it necessarily matter if the world government knows where Laughtail is if what they're just trying to do is prevent people from accessing the treasure because of what it would do to their power?
Well, 'cause then they could just move the treasure, right? Like, why would they not move it to like Pangaea Castle or so? Like, why would they keep it there?
There might be, that's, I think that there could be potential answers for that in the theory, in the story, that would be satisfying at the very least. But I just kind of wanted to get your answer for that. The first theory I have today is from Koyaki Channel, a Japanese YouTuber. Not to jump back in with some of the underwater stuff, but this theory is that Laughtail may not be in a giant whale, like I've suggested before, but that it is in an underwater cove or cavern, and that one way to access it is through Enies Lobby, which the world government has kept open for their own means. And another way to potentially get there is beneath Reverse Mer. Beneath Reverse Mountain. Thematic evidence for this theory is that the Mercator projection of the North Pole, a Mercator is basically a guy who invented maps, is super famous for that, which separates the world into four pieces in a way in this map that actually really resembles Reverse Mountain, kind of with an X at the top. And in this projection of the North Pole, there's a big mountain at the pole and a big hole underneath that, which does kind of line up with some of your the One Piece could be somewhere beneath Reverse Mountain type theories. Is that an F class
Wait,
or an S class
okay.
theory?
I feel like I didn't understand that fully. So this Mercator person, is this someone in real
He's a
life
real
or
life person who basically invented maps. And when we talk about thematic evidence that Oda has brought in from the real world into the One Piece world. You know, for example, we see characters who look like, you know, the Elder Stars look like real world leaders. In the Mercator projection, it looks a lot like the One Piece world if you were to look at it from Reverse Mountain at the center of it.
And so, yeah. So, in my head, the Reverse Mountain has to go down to the seafloor, right? Like, it's not just like floating in the ocean, right?
Well, because this theory involves an underwater cove or cavern or something like that, it could be the kind of thing that's potentially cut out un through into like an
Oh, like
underwater,
some like
exactly,
a
like a
hole at the bottom.
subterranean, exactly. Exactly. Or within the middle of it somewhere.
You know what I'm gonna get this
Come
year.
on, man.
What? Okay,
Why
so
are you always hating on these underwater theories?
no, because all of what I feel like you came to me today and you're like, what if it was underwater? And all of these underwater theories are like, what if it was underwater? And that's like the entire basis of the theory.
Like it's on the moon. Like, come
No,
on.
there are actual like thematic things that you can point to, and I mean, you don't think Laptail's on the moon, but you think the moon can be important and might be a destination we go to later in the story, right? You just don't think Laptail's on the moon, right?
Sure.
So it's not just like someone one day was like, what if Laptail is on the moon? Someone was like, the moon is an integral part of the One Piece lore. We have all these different civilizations from there.
One thing that we do have is
Whereas this underwater thing is just like, what if Laptail is underwater?
that to me, it feels like a little bit more than that. One thing I do think is interesting is with the Japanese of Roger saying, "I left my treasure. If you want to go find it, is actually like, if you want it, I left it there." And he uses a word for there that actually could mean like down there or like at the bottom, for example. And so I think that's a very common reading, right? Like the kanji for it, the way you would say is like, I left it down there would be the implication for it. And so I think that's one of the things that people find really interesting about this theory is it would be a worthwhile interpretation of Oda's words, in particular because within Japanese, there's a lot of different word plays that he does use where he's taking words that are interpreted one way and using them a different way, even with the way One Piece is written, where you're actually told that it's like the super secret treasure that connects everyone. That's not something that actually translates in any way in English, despite it being something that every time you see One Piece written is written in Japanese. So that's another piece of it. But what theory do you have for me today, Abraham?
Just in case it wasn't clear, that was an F class thing. Because I never actually said anything. You know, I just want to make that clear. So my theory comes from Grand Line Review. And it basically predicts that Blackbeard at some point will become the Pirate King. And the basis of this prediction is that both Luffy and Blackbeard's character are very integrally tied into this whole idea of fate, right? We hear Blackbeard talk about fate a lot. We know that he's made a lot of very conscious decisions across his life that seem to be like guided under like this belief that, you know, this is what he's fated to do. He's like, the Yami Yama no Mi chose me as this devil fruit. Like, I was fated for this devil fruit. I went onto Whitebeard's ship because that was like, this would give me the best opportunity to like fulfill all of my goals that I'm fated to like accomplish. Those aren't the words verbatim used. But what Liam from Grand Line does is he basically then ties the story of Blackbeard to the story of Macbeth. And for people who haven't read Macbeth, it's basically the story of this Scotsman who gets a I guess a not a prediction,
No.
a prophecy, thank you, from three
Our
witches.
producer, thank you. Our producer, Alex Holloway, came and gave him the right word. Thank you.
I knew it was a P word. I was like, it's not a prediction. He gets a prophecy from three witches.
A plus in his audition. Whatever. Listen, man, it's a Japanese video,
That's
and
very fair.
so it's like Merkutatore. So I have no freaking clue how to look up
Oh my God.
a Mercator projection. Thank you.
So Macbeth gets a prophecy from these three witches where they're basically like, these are the titles you will achieve throughout your life, and eventually you will become the King of Scotland. And in order to make this prophecy come true, he then goes about killing a bunch of his allies and friends, and eventually kills the King of Scotland, in order to, like I said, make the prophecy come true. And eventually his obsession with I guess achieving what he's fated to do leads him to make a bunch of enemies, one of which then eventually kills him and what. And what Liam points out is that Blackbeard, at some point in the series, Oda has shown that he has like a mother and like two sisters that are, I don't know, they're technically not canon because they're not in the series, but Oda like did draw them. And Blackbeard also, there's three witches, there's a lot of
In
stuff.
Macbeth, there's three witches.
Sorry, in Macbeth, the three witches, and Blackbeard himself, there's a lot of different things that tie like three to him. Like his Jolly Roger has three skulls.
Right.
He, a lot of people speculate that he's gonna have three devil fruits and whatnot. So
Right.
there is this idea that maybe Blackbeard, the reason why he was able to make all of these decisions from such a young age, like joining Whitebeard's crew, like looking for the Yami Yami no Mi, was because he received some kind of prophecy from, I guess, whatever his equivalent of the witches would be. And he is now making all of these decisions very actively in order to try and achieve his dream, which is to become the Pirate King.
So, I have a combination review of this. The idea that Blackbeard has some kind of prophecy, I think, is, to me, that's an S-class theory, although it's not really fleshed, like, in a lot of ways, it's not fleshed out enough to be an S-class theory on its own. But the idea when, yes, like, the moments like this fruit chose me, I think a lot of the things I've talked about is the potential of if he's a buccaneer, he has some amount of understanding of whatever that mythology is about Nika and potentially, like, whatever other god is when they talk about his lineage being special. I think that the idea that he feels like he's fulfilling some kind of destiny, like, his ship is called the Saber of Zebek, right? And so I think that the idea that he's fulfilling some kind of destiny or knowledge that he has, is S-class. The whole Macbeth connection seems totally extraneous to that to me. I've been talking for a while about how I think if he's a buccaneer, he has this something he's trying to do that we don't necessarily understand and that he's been motivated by. So the idea that it's Macbeth is an F-class theory. The whole three women thing, it's like there are a lot of things. Like there's a rule of three in photos where it's like you want to have one third, one third, one third. There's a rule of three in just lists. Whenever you write something, you probably even in high school are taught, like, sometimes like three is nice to have, right? Like something, something, and something. And so the idea of trying to connect that to Macbeth felt totally superfluous to me. What I think would really make this an S-class theory is coming up with the answer to what is that prophecy and do we have any understanding of how that would impact the rest of the story.
I think that's a fair point. I do want to just say real quick that we do know Oda draws from a lot of different cultures, a lot of different civilizations, a lot of different works of literature, right? And Shakespeare is not something that he's ever drawn from, but I think it wouldn't be unreasonable. Like, I agree, it's a stretch at this
It's
point to tie them together, but
it is equally as what if is as anything I say in other theories about
yeah.
underground.
But S-class anyway, you gave it an S-class, so
I
I'm gonna
gave
take
part
that
of
as
it.
a
I gave
win.
part of it as an S class, and it was the part that had nothing to do with him talking about Macbeth. And so then the part that was more related to things that I've been saying. But my second theory is from my guy Euteron. He suggests that the world is part of a connected artificial intelligence, a sort of successful Punk Records that encompasses a lot more people. The one thing he works, this is kind of a wordplay, but the power of love is something we talk about. Ai no chikara, the word for love is I. And he's kind of like, yes, what if? What if?
Power of
That
love.
we're kind of talking about, what if this kind of, we're kind of talking about the power of AI in terms of this being a larger artificial intelligence similar to Punk Records. And the D, or a defect, or a group of people who don't follow those rules, and that's what the world government is seeking to control, is that, like,
So we basically
consciousness
have
that
the
connects all of
Matrix.
us. That's one way you could say it. That's a way you could put it, at least. S-class or F-class?
Yeah, this is gonna be another F-class
Okay,
theory.
you don't have to laugh like
It's because
that.
you look at me with like, I look at your eyes when I say this, right? And you have like this hopeful look. You're like, maybe this is the one that's gonna sell Abraham. And I'm just like, why do you bring me this garbage? No, I mean like, this just seems too sci-fi-y. Like, One Piece is not like some kind of science fiction, you know, series, right? Obviously, we have hints of that with like the Germa 66 and whatever, but like
a lot of science stuff, a lot of research, the DNA factors or thing, lineage factors that have to do with science. Obviously, there's like the ancient kingdom seems to be very technologically advanced, things like that.
Yeah, I just
like Vegapunk is a scientist. He actually does have a split consciousness and has been trying to create some kind of joint consciousness among a bunch of people.
Right. Records. But like, just, no, I think it's just the idea the idea that everyone is under control of like this programming or whatever that like keeps them in line. Like they are, I think it's a much. So the idea of us being the world government being creating some kind of utopia, not a utopia is not the right word, but creating the impression that through propaganda that all these islands that they're protecting are benefiting from the world government.
Right.
Meanwhile, really they're the ones pulling all the strings and creating a lot of the turmoil in the world. Kind of like take Dressrosa, but make it much, much, much larger scale. Is a much, much more beautifully written, I think, power structure. Maybe not power structure. You know what I mean? Like that.
Say that, but what Dressrosa wasn't just him creating propaganda. It was actually some kind of mind control of a huge percentage of the population who doesn't remember anyone who gets turned into a toy.
Right, but it was okay. How do I put this? I think that is very different from what you're saying, right? The Sugar's ability is essentially needed in order to keep people from revolting.
I'm just
right?
saying, like, that when you talk about what the world government's doing and comparing it to saying Doflamingo is more compelling, I'm saying if there was some kind of mind control or brainwashing from the world government, that there was an aspect of that in what Doflamingo
You could read
did,
it like that. That's not how
that
I read
some
it.
Some combination of those two things would be particularly interesting.
No, I don't think this idea of brainwashing is interesting at all.
You know, it's obviously I don't think this is the kind of thing that is actually true, and I'll say that I have written in my notes Abraham's gonna rate this.
Yeah, of course, you knew.
But I do think what's really interesting about this is it brings up for me thoughts about how the world government is actually controlling people, if potentially they're doing something that they maybe even think is good for the world or good for the population. And at the very least, that would create for me some number of interesting possibilities of what could of what facing them, of what this like decision that might have to be made after Luffy and Blackbeard are potentially still standing after defeating him in the world government, like what that potential decision about the world might have to look like in terms of how we use the eventual treasure and history of the world. And I think that I don't think it takes away if there's some amount of brainwashing and control from the. Like, I don't think it takes away there's some amount of brainwashing and control from the impact that it's actually having on people.
You think if this brainwashing thing were to be
maybe the ancient weapon in the sky is a satellite.
I got a quick question.
And, you know, doing a if, brainwashing
like,
science.
When the world government is like overthrown, for example,
right?
Are people just going to remember what happened in the Void Century or something? Is that the idea? Like you know what I mean? So I'm saying if people in like Dressrosa, if we take like that example where you're like, you know, they're, you know, mentally manipulating these people, they've forgotten about all their loved ones. The moment Sugar was taken out, everyone was just like, oh my God, how did I forget about my husband? How did I forget about my kids? All this other stuff, right? People, like, it's like you woke up out of this dream that you were having, right? All of these citizens.
Right.
I'm saying, would you expect something like that to happen to the world at large in One Piece once the world government went?
I don't know exactly what it would look like. I think that, again, there are a lot of these things that I think are interesting ideas that I don't have an exact fully fleshed out concept of exactly how it would be affecting the world. I just think that like the potential of that thing happening would be interesting. It would be interesting to see how it actually evolves.
Yeah.
But I know you think it's an F-class theory.
Of
so
course I do.
Thank you.
Yeah.
What do we got next today,
Abraham?
Got some
big news.
Big news.
Big news. One, I don't know, I can't call him this. I was gonna say a legend.
I mean, he is a legend.
He is a legend. He's a legend for
Right.
he's probably more infamous than he is famous. Not probably. He's definitely
We're
more
off One
famous.
Piece now, everyone.
Yeah,
Thank
we're
you for the
off
One
One
Piece
Piece.
part.
Yeah.
Culture time.
O.J. Simpson died. He died of prostate cancer at the age
Was
of
that how he died? I
yeah,
didn't even see that.
at the age of 76. Get yourself screened. Maybe not you. You're not that old. But you know,
Sixty.
in general, you know, if you're probably like pushing 50, 60, start to get yourself screened for
Yeah.
prostate cancer, because it does kill people
Right.
and it is very, very treatable if you catch it early enough. Yeah. I saw some wild takes about OJ on Twitter. In general, I feel like Twitter is kind of the place I go to when stuff like this happens,
Right.
just because, you know, the anonymity lets, you know, some people are, could be pretty, some people are pretty funny on Twitter.
Right.
Apparently he died at his bedside with a bunch of his grandchildren and children around him, and allegedly had them sign like NDAs and put their phones, like keep their phones outside or whatever when they went to go see him. What do you like make of the life and death of OJ? What do you think? How do you think that shaped America?
I thought you were gonna be like, what do you think he said to them on his
Well, what
deathbed?
do you
Like,
think? Do you
what
think
do you think
he
OJ said to everyone with
confessed? You think at his
NDAs?
deathbed?
That's what you have me wondering,
Yeah.
I'm not gonna lie.
I mean,
That's what you have me
why
wondering.
is he sorry they signed an
Yeah,
NDA?
that's what I'm saying, right? Like, and who's gonna sue them, like, now that he's dead? Yeah, it's a really interesting question. And it's one of these things, I was talking about it with my mom and stepfather when I was visiting them in Hickory, North Carolina, just before I came here. And you know, it's really difficult to, I think, imagine what OJ meant to both like the black community and just his superstardom. You know, I was reading something earlier or watching something earlier. A friend who's a reporter for Track and Field was commenting about how OJ was a broadcaster for track, even. You know, he won the Heisman in college. He was an MVP in the NFL, and like at a time when running backs were really some of the superstars of the league, he was by far the best.
The first player to rush for 2,000 yards, and he did it in a
14 game
14 game
season,
season.
right? And so to me, it's one of the things that I don't feel like I have an exact appreciation for how famous this dude is, but it feels like almost the beginning. You can imagine how it's the beginning. And to be clear, you know, we're both born in like 93, maybe you're 94.
94,
Yeah,
yeah.
but like that's, you
Right
know,
around the
that's
trial.
right around the time that the trial was happening. And it's easy to imagine how this is sort of the beginning in a lot of ways of the celebrity culture that we kind of have today, where we're like focusing on every little aspect of people's lives, where we're focusing on the scandals and like trying to make them fall. I mean, like, you know, from my understanding, is one of the first like everyone's just tuning in type things was him on the car
It
chase, right?
was.
And like imagine Tom Brady in a car chase
Yeah.
after the police beat his house with, you know, all the
OJ was
bonkers.
bigger than Tom Brady. I like
Yeah.
legitimately. I just want to. I because what you're saying is true. I don't think, because everyone knows him. I think everyone our age really only knows him for the murder trial
Right.
and everything that he that I mean I think he did that I think most people think he did.
Right.
But he was one of the first black athletes to be almost unanimously accepted by white America.
True.
Muhammad Ali was obviously a legend around that time and was beloved by the black community,
Right.
but he was not loved overall, right? OJ was doing these Hertz commercials. He was, like you said, he was the Heisman winner. He was beloved. And ESPN actually has an amazing documentary, I think, that people everyone should watch. It's called OJ Made in America. It's like a four-part documentary that goes not just into the trial, but into his childhood, his upbringing, race relations in America,
Right.
all of these different things that contribute to what OJ ended up developing into, and how his all the different factors that played into the not guilty verdict that eventually came through, right? I think one of the funny things is when I was like maybe 16 or 17, when maybe it wasn't that, when that second trial happened, when he actually got put in jail for
Right,
the armed
for
robbery
stealing
stuff.
the effects or
yeah,
whatever.
yeah, yeah, yeah. I remember my parents telling me,
"This is crazy."
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was wild.
Like, what a thing to do.
My parents told me, they're like,
to be O.J. Simpson and do that, like, both no, it was fame and also like. But, I mean, you were the dude that everyone's like, this dude killed this woman.
The CTE kicked in.
For you to go on an armed robbery spree to steal your own memorabilia is like so bonkers. But please continue.
I remember my mom and dad telling me that, like, you know, they've been trying to arrest this guy for years. They try and, like, there are a lot of people genuinely in the Black community who don't think he's guilty or don't really care. About whether or not he did it. Right. And I think a lot of it stems from a lot of, like, racial discrimination that's historically happened.
I think there's something about seeing someone, like a Black man, overcome the criminal justice system in a way where it's, like, where it feels like, you know, rich white people do this all the time.
Right. No, exactly. But, like, what they said to me is, like, they tried to get him before, they couldn't get him, and they keep on coming after him, and now they eventually got him. Like, they painted OJ in, like, a victim light. Now I'm older, I'm like, you know, that's kind of wild. But, like, it's not an uncommon opinion, like, to have in, like, the, like, Black community.
Yeah.
And I feel like people aren't going to be, you know, particularly vocal about this. But I'm sure there are a lot of people who aren't all that upset about his, like, that. Yeah, aren't that upset about his passing, right? Like, they I don't want to say that they see OJ as a martyr, but they're like, all of these atrocities, all of these things have been committed against us for so long that they're kind of like, you know, OJ is kind of like the comeuppance.
Right.
You know what I mean?
All I'm going to say is, if you're going to celebrate that, I hope you celebrated Henry Kissinger 10 times. So, our next segment is the David... Is it DZ? Excuse me, one of our friends' dating update.
DZ.
Yeah, we got.
You're gonna keep it anonymous?
I mean, you know, I feel like we shouldn't have put him on blast like that.
He wants to come on the podcast.
Oh, he wants to. Oh,
eventually.
But, okay, so then this is perfect. The David Zhang dating update. Abraham's roommate and our friend David Zhang was with us at our good friend Chris Noda's 30th birthday yesterday, and our friend David Zhang, not to be confused with David Zhang, a friend of ours from high school, was asking for advice on a girl situation. He's 27, been on 2 dates with a lovely lady friend who's 26, and not sure what to do. On their last date, they went to a museum. He felt like he had a good time with her, and they sat a little close, and their arms were touching. I asked him if he got excited when their arms touched, and he declined to answer. You know, I think he definitely knew what I was talking about. You know, I think he got
a little,
excited. After the date, he said he sent her a lovely poem that he found on the internet.
Oh my god!
But so because sweet. he doesn't feel like he knows her quote unquote values, i.e., if she wants to get married, have kids, how she values money, he doesn't know if they should go out again.
Yeah,
Abraham, this man's crazy, right?
I feel crazy, like, right? David should have been born like 30 years ago when it comes to. He just overthinks all. Honestly, he's sending a poem to someone after the second date is such a sweet thing. He's like, he's such a sweet guy. But I also feel like if I got that, I would like, I might like read too much into it. You know what I mean? Like, right. I'd be like, you're more invested in this than I am.
Well, bro, he was talking about how he's not sure because he has all of these other questions about like, does she value these same specific things? And he's like, yeah, I don't know if she, like, maybe she's more excited than I am. And I'm like, bro, she thinks you're in love with her. he read the poem to us, and it was all, he's like reading it, and it's all like, you know, something about like walking. It's like a very sweet, like, walking down a road. Or, like, this kind of stuff. And I'm like, bro, like, she thinks you're in love with her after 2 days right now. Like, she doesn't think, like, oh, this guy's having questions, and I'm in love with him.
Yeah. Yeah. No, he's just the classic overthinker. Like, after 2 dates, you're not expected to know if you're going to be long-term compatible with one person, right? 2 dates, I think, is, are they a serial killer?
Yes.
Do they have blatant red flags that I know I need to avoid?
Yes.
And then maybe try and figure out if you have physical chemistry.
Right, and you know, all I'm saying is, you know, he got excited. It sounds like we got... He didn't say he got like, he seemed like he got a little excited. So, you know,
Yeah.
all I'm saying is if you notice your arms touching that much, like, I'm not gonna notice my arm touching you that much. I'm saying if my arms touch, that's something I notice and
I
remember,
don't know.
I probably got a little excited. So it sounds like there's a little potential physical chemistry. That's all I'm saying. Continue. Sorry.
No, I think, but yeah, I think he's just an overthinker, and
Yeah.
he's trying to take the information that he has right now and be like,
Yes. Yeah.
and it, like, figure out, am I going to want to settle down with this person? And I think part of it is because he doesn't want to waste her time. Like, he's not even thinking about himself. He's just like, I don't want to, like, he literally told me, I don't want to lead her on. And I'm like, if you don't know, if you know that there's no future with her,
Right.
and you continue to go out with her just for whatever reason, maybe you could say that you're leading her
I can
on.
give some more insight because, you know, we
Yeah.
were talking with our friend Sean and, you know, and Rachel and, you know, got a little bit more context for that is that he had the first person he dated, it was someone who, you know, they made out a little bit, and then it felt like he ended up just continuing to be in the relationship because it felt like it was what she wants, not what he wants. And I think I can understand how you would react from having been in that situation and be really afraid of ending up in that situation again. But I also think that that's one of the things that as you date more and get more mature about dating, you can understand the difference between being really excited and having fun. Yes. I've been saying excited in a different context. That time I really meant in the like innocent, like your heart's fluttering and you're enjoying it and having fun. And leading someone on and being like, and not knowing when you actually have to set that boundary. But it's like you said, right? At two dates, I think we've said this in the podcast before. It's like, is this person a serial killer? And if not, and if I enjoy their presence and I think they're cute and like all of those things, then why not just keep going and find out? But every time we would say this in probably even stronger words than I said it today, like, you know, because he would just keep being like, oh yeah, oh, I had a really good time on the date. And I'm like, well, then what is your freaking problem? Like, you just said, he's like, yeah, I had a lot of fun. Yeah. Oh yeah, our arms were touching and it felt good. I liked it. Yeah.
It
And
sounds like I'm like
I'm like, what? You're answering your own freaking question. But, you know, I think that that's one of the things as you get older and date, you definitely come to appreciate is you don't understand someone after two dates and you have to just keep seeing them if you're enjoying it and having fun. Oh, and every time we said that, sorry, every time we said that, you would just like look away and then see him for like 2 seconds, just like with his face down, like kind of muttering to himself. He's like, and then he would ask another
You had this
question.
man
And we're
pressed.
like, David.
You
Then he would ask another question. He would ask us questions. So I'm like, I swear to God, David, like, just
I will
go after
say,
again.
I feel like this is part of his personality in general, in terms of pleasing other people too. Because like I said, like Jordan mentioned, we're roommates, and I feel like I notice this kind of behavior to some degree in our own relationship, where it's like, I will avoid telling him some of the smaller things that maybe might slightly inconvenience me, because I feel like in his head he'll build it up to be like so much more,
Right, sure.
right?
Yeah.
And because he doesn't want to upset anyone, he always wants like to make people happy, right? And I think it's just like him taking that and then putting that into a relationship where he's not able to, if he wanted to leave that relationship with his ex, right? He doesn't feel comfortable enough. Like, this is what I want. I understand maybe that's not what you want, but I want this for myself. And he's not able to say that. And I feel like that's a skill he's got to
Our
develop.
producer's wife, actually, Katie, was talking about how that was something she had to learn how to do, and that was something that really helped their relationship because when she wasn't doing it was really
No,
difficult
and he's
for
got to learn how to
both
do
of them.
that.
Yeah.
I think he does.
Well, the good news is hopefully we'll be able to have him on and we'll figure out if he learns how to do that over the course of time. Well, you'll definitely get another David Zhang dating update in the next
Yes.
few weeks, we hope. But that's all we have for time. Next week, we'll finally have a chapter, so I'm not going to have all these scratches all over my body and come back next week to hear our thoughts in chapter 11, 12. And maybe at the next break, we'll finally get into the YouTubers that we like and hate on. No promises, because we've been talking about that for a month. In the meantime, we are your friends who read One Piece. Help us get more friends by liking, sharing, giving us 5 stars. Come on, be our 4th Spotify review.
Yes.
And keeping an eye out for YouTube clips.
Keep in mind
Abraham's ugly mug on all of the thumbnails.
2 out of our 3 Spotify reviews, I think, are me and Jordan.
So now that we're at 500 listens, I think it's time to get one of you. So thank you, everyone, for listening. Go out and review us later.
Take it easy.